Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America, where we're getting that blistering heat you're hearing about all around the country. No rain, little drought going on, but it's been either at or with the heat index at 100 degrees all week and will be through the weekend. So I will say, being in the Midwest, I am grateful it's not snow, but I don't really care a lot for either of the extremes. So I hope you're keeping cool wherever you are and that you're having a good week. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, every Wednesday night, and if you'd like to know more about me, you can check out my website, inaflash.org, or you can like me on Facebook, same thing, at inaflash.org. Now, tonight we're going to do something a little different. We've got a phenomenal double header, if you will. Funny, Brain Injury Radio, double header. But two different, very relevant topics. Two women very dedicated to what they're doing. And the first one I'm going to bring on, we're doing an hour each. The first hour is going to be Julie Hatch with me, and we're going to be talking about a parenting revolution for higher evolution, which I thought was an awesome name for her book. It also occurred to me when I had the opportunity to have Julie as a guest that parenting doesn't come with a handbook, and whether you have a brain injury or you don't have a brain injury, parenting is a challenging feat. And so any help that can be given or insight that can be given, I think, is a really good thing. There are more threats out there today and challenges in parenting than perhaps any time in the past. So Julie Hatch is going to join me again, like I said, to discuss not only her book, she has a website too, juliephillipshatch.com. I will be repeating that throughout the show, but also when the show is over, I'll be able to add that to the program notes. So all the places over social media and at braininjuryradio.com where there are program notes and you're clicking on a link to listen to the show, you'll be able to find her website, and we'll be talking about all the things that you'll find there. But her book discusses raising resilient, responsible, compassionate kids from the inside out. Julie maintains that trying to force a child who is shy to be more bold goes against their nature, or trying to make a creative child more sports-driven can be folly. But truly deeply observing, listening to, perceiving, and encouraging your child's inner spirit, you have the ability to create a happy, emotionally healthy, and successful child turned adult. With that, I'm going to bring on Julie. Julie, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being with me tonight.
Hi, Kim. Thank you. Very nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, so parenting, as I said, no rule book for parenting. In fact, I was at a meeting today, and we were talking about a different topic, and the gal was using an analogy, and the analogy she used, and she was periodically, she's holding a baby when she's on this Zoom meeting, and she said that when she had this child, and I think this is probably fairly common, especially for first-time parents, that they go out and buy every book that there is on parenting, you know, how to parent. When I was growing up, and this really dates me, it was Dr. Spock was the go-to book, you know, for how to raise a kid. And they read everything and they absorb everything that's in this book. And then, as she put it today, the minute you have that baby, all of that's out the window. Because each kid is willful, different, you know, does what it does on its own, and the parent doesn't have experience to be that. The only experience is perhaps what was modeled, you know, by that child's parent. And so not an easy task. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the parent advocate business?
Okay, sure. Well, I am a parent of three boys who are now grown to start with, and I have always worked in pediatrics and in Western medicine. So I've worked with kids professionally and personally for over 30 years. And what got me into this realm of parenting is, at one point, I left Western medicine and pursued Chinese medicine. I became an acupuncturist and an herbalist. And with that training came the insights that what I apply now to my talking to parents and coaching parents from the Eastern perspective, which is kind of different from Western medicine, and it's a more holistic, mindful consciousness. It's just a different way of approaching parenting. It's not that's more holistic. It's more approaching the child from a perspective that you connect with the child, that you connect with the child's inner essence, what they're all about. And it's just, like I say, it's a more holistic, healthier, I think, way of connecting with your child and then raising your child from that perspective.
I got a question for you. Since it was 30 years and you started out in traditional medicine, I have my opinion just from being a person, not from being a parent, and thank God I'm not a kid now like I was back then, but What made you change from being in the traditional medical model to switching? There's a lot of change that's gone on, I guess we'll say, in the traditional medical model. I'm known for saying that, you know, Dr. Welby is long gone and 15 minutes is in. And it seems to me that with kids these days, and maybe I'm wrong and I won't paint it with a broad brush and say they're all like this, but what I've heard and what I've experienced just as a patient myself is that it seems to be a 15-20 minute do the deal, you know, the physical, the vaccination, the cold, the whatever it is that's going on, and you're out the door. It doesn't seem, medicine doesn't seem to be very relationship centered these days. It's more like body shop to me. More like body shop relay, you know, you're in, you're out, and that's the end of it. At least that's how I'm feeling. My doctor left the business a couple years ago, and I had been in that office through the retirement of one doctor, two doctors, and all my records were there, so I just went with a person that, you know, a doctor that was in that office, and for one thing, I'm really aging because he looks like he's 12 to me, but which makes it very hard for me to take him seriously. But, you know, I've noticed some changes, and I don't know if it's like this with children or not, but, you know, we don't even take our clothes off anymore and get an examination the way that we did in the past. There's no exam. He asks a few questions, most of the time not looking eye to eye or having that connection, but looking at his tablet, you know, reading things on the tablet. Well, I think we should get a blood draw, look at blah, 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 blah. You know, and he's kind of talking to his computer. And I always tell people here, if you have questions, and then I'll shut up and let you answer the question I asked, is to write down any question that you have, because the time is short compared to the way it used to be. And a lot of people are a little nervous, a little shy, a little whatever when they go to their doctor. It's not quite like going shopping. And so you tend to forget things. And since it might be another year till you see the person, in the traditional medical model, you might want to write down any question that you have so you're prepared, you know, to fire them off, boom, 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 and hold them to an answer in the time that you guys have to spend together. Right. What made you change? Were you seeing any similarities there, or...
Yeah, those are all very good points that you make, very good points, and brings lots of things to mind. So a couple of things went into my decision to leave Western medicine and go into Chinese, or I'm going to call it Eastern medicine. I will start off by saying I am not against Western medicine by any means. Western medicine is great for when you have a heart attack or you're in a car accident, or you need emergent acute care. There's nothing like Western medicine. Eastern medicine is not going to save your heart attack or save you from bleeding out from a car accident. So there is definitely a place for Western medicine. However,
of course,
there is also a big, big place for promoting health, preventing disease, which is what I was interested in when I switched to Eastern medicine. The way that it came about in my life is I went to Brazil on a medical mission trip back 20 years ago, maybe now, and to help kids with cancer. And this is when I was still working in neonatal or in pediatric intensive care. So I went to help kids who were being treated for cancer. And what happened down there was nothing at all like I was expecting to do, because for one thing, I didn't speak the language, and for another thing, I had no license or right to do any kind of practicing medicine or nurse practitioner or nursing or anything down there at all. So what I came home with was the experience of hands-on time and attention to the parents. While the kids were being treated, it was the mothers who really needed the hands-on care, so they were massages and just eye contact and smiles and singing and all this other kind of stuff that was just completely foreign to what I was used to, but made a huge, I saw what a huge impact it made on the mothers. So I came back from there and pursued, you know, massage therapy and Reiki and craniosacral, all these other alternative modalities, and landed on acupuncture and went to acupuncture school and herbal school. And that just set me on this road down alternative or complementary or whatever you want to call it kind of medicine. And not first, but when you talk about being hurried through the doctor's office and they don't really pay attention to you, my acupuncture practice is completely opposite from that. It's all about listening to what the patient has to say because every single patient is different. And this isn't even about the kids stuff. This is just about acupuncture treating kids and adults. But it is taking the time and getting to know the individual patient. And the beauty of Chinese medicine and acupuncture is that when you decide how to treat somebody, you do a whole battery of examining in a Chinese medicine way, which means checking the pulse, checking the tongue, and really listening to the history. Is that you get to the root of the problem. So if somebody comes in with a headache, you don't just give them a medication and say, "Here, this is for your headache." Chinese medicine, there are many different reasons for a headache that could be happening. And so you treat that, the root cause. It's not just putting a Band-Aid over the symptom. It is treating the root cause, which is really goes much, much deeper and much, much more effective, really, and more long-term than the Western medicine typical way of doing it. So that is how I got into this. And then from there, the Chinese medicine teachings about five elements and other ways, I carried that on to kids' behavior and helping parents understand their kids with their root cause of often behavioral problems and seeing them from a more holistic perspective, again, like I said before.
Yes, great. Okay, so I've gotten acupuncture too, and that is more not only the talking, but you also have hands-on. There's a level of, in a good way, intimacy, I think, that's lacking in some of the traditional medical treatments. And I'm with you. I don't mean to diss the traditional medical model or to say that some kids don't need drugs, but I'll say what I say almost every week when it comes up, that we're the most overprescribed country in the world, I think, of pill pelting. When a kid comes in and has any kind of problem, they get relegated to a shrink and usually get a pill or two popped their way, and I'm really hating to see that with kids younger and younger, you know, these days. That used to not be an issue until we were older, but I see that it says that I read that you, one of your children had ADHD, and I'm noticing now, you know, I keep contrasting when I was young 100 years ago. One of the things that they used to tell every parent who came in was, what's that curve of the spine called?
Scoliosis.
Thank you. Every kid who went into the doctor's office, I think, was told they had some amount of scoliosis. And then in another generation, it was something else, that just about every kid who came out had some degree of, or there was discussion about this. You know, ADHD is one now that it seems like I'm hearing a lot of parents saying that their kid has been diagnosed with, and again, not saying that that isn't a real thing, but all of a sudden it's gotten to be more prevalent and more kids are being diagnosed with that and being given medication when they're 10 years old.
Even younger.
11
like
years
5
old.
Years old. Yep.
Yeah, I haven't met any of those yet, but that's shocking. Also, even any of these ages, and a lot of them are also simultaneously being told that their kid is depressed. And yeah. I can't imagine putting kids those ages on antidepressants. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical professional. So I won't say that there isn't cases where that is needed. But it does seem to me like I would try an awful lot of other things before I went down that road if I was a parent. You know, one of those things would be the talking and the listening that you were talking about, and trying to empower my kid to have that resilience that you talked about, and to not have a victim or an I'm sick mentality all the time.
Yeah.
It's bad enough, you know, teenager 20s on, but when it's getting into kids in the single digits, then that's going to be they're setting up a track for that kid to run on the rest of their life. That is not good, you know, to me, that's just really not good. So it's great. I think acupuncture is great. And for those that don't know, we won't talk a lot about it, except that if you're creeped out by needles, which I was, have always been creeped out by needles. I just like to reassure people that, and you know, we are talking about parenting tonight. This doesn't have to do with that. I can't speak to it. I'm only a puppy parent, but in alternative health treatments for myself after my brain injury, all those things you mentioned that you did, and a lot of our listeners have tried everything we could find in the traditional model, gotten every pill shoved down our throat, then moved over on our own like blind mice trying to find our way through the maze of holistic choices. And I've done massage, I've done Reiki, I've done EMDR, you know, done acupuncture. Uh-huh. But my point being is that in acupuncture, folks, if you're somebody who's afraid of needles, the needles are about like one of the hairs on your head. It's not like the needle you think of when you're getting a flu shot. It's not painful. In fact, I found it after the pins were there, the needles were there, and you can give me the right terminology, but, you know, it being a release for that pain, pent-up pain that was there.
Yeah.
And so it's really a comfortable thing. And I think now when I was doing it, insurance wasn't paying for it. But my understanding from people who have been on and called is that a lot of insurance is paying for that now, seeing it as a legitimate, like everything is legitimized by whether insurance pays or not, right?
Yeah.
But
well,
joke,
unfortunately,
that's
it's
a joke,
true.
Folks. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the joke part of it is that there's a lot of really viable treatments that just don't involve big pharma or as big a bucks, and so they're dismissed by doctors who are trained and close-minded, you know, trained in the traditional medical model of corporate medicine, period, and aren't open-minded to referring you or being interested in some of those other things. And I'm glad that things like acupuncture have slid through, because I had a choice back when I was doing it. I was getting massage and acupuncture, which I was paying for both out of pocket, and couldn't afford to do that anymore after a while, and then had to make a decision. Would I rather get, it was massage with cranial sacral work or acupuncture, and I opted for the massage and cranial work, a little more pleasurable than, as much as I didn't mind the
needles. Cranial sacral is really powerful stuff, too. Yeah, cranial sacral is great, really very powerful, good stuff. So I can understand your choice.
Yeah, so when did you decide, so you grew up, not grew up, you raised three boys, and you switched from the traditional medical model into a more alternative, holistic. When did you really get involved beyond the treating, and because of the method, you Eastern medicine that you were practicing, you got the opportunity to talk and do a little more relationship building with the parents and the kids, your patients. But what made you decide, or did it just kind of happen to you, that parents were saying that they were having problems with their kids, either behavior or adjusting? What made you pick up on things, like I read in the beginning, if you force a child who is shy to be more bold, those kinds of things that I was reading about in the bio, tell us a little. And again, Julie does a lot of things, and we're going to talk about a few of them, but one of them is this book, A Parenting Revolution for Higher Evolution. What made you decide to write a book about raising more resilient, responsible, compassionate kids from the inside out? And what was the impetus? What was going on that made you think that that would be a good idea? Because something tipped you, there was a problem. Usually there's a problem, and you're writing about either awareness or possible solutions to that problem. And what do you mean, without giving away your whole book, from the inside out?
Yeah, okay. So the reason I decided to write the book was really just stemmed off from my parent coaching practice. And I saw, not only in my work, but also just in the world around me, is a lot, and you read about it in papers, it's everywhere, that kids are growing up to be more and more anxious and more depressed. And, you know, I was really interested in the whole anxiety part of it. And it struck me as that's really unfortunate for a child to go into early adulthood already anxious and depressed, you know, what's going to happen to them later on. And that just, it just isn't right. It's not fair to the kid. It's just, it's not the way I don't think it should be. And I see parents also, and they come into my practice, and they just don't quite get, I don't think that they quite get their kid. They say, well, you know, they're supposed to be doing this, but they're being this way, and they're acting this way, and it's just, you know, it's just wrong, and I punish them. And it just struck me that they were going about parenting in a reactive way that wasn't beneficial to them or to the child. So I try to approach it in a way that is beneficial to the child and also makes parenting a whole lot easier. And okay, and I wanted to touch on from the inside out, that again comes from Eastern medicine, and that comes from treating the inside, the root, the very core, or the root of the problem. When you treat the root problem, or you pay attention to the core of the child, then the outside will flourish, or the problem on the outside will be fixed, because you're getting at it from the inside. You don't want to, or I don't think that raising kids from the outside, meaning help having them find their self-worth according to Facebook or accolades from the soccer coach or all this external stuff saying, oh, yeah, you're great, you're great. Where we want our kids to get the self-worth and the confidence from is from their inside. They need to know that inside who they are at the core is perfect, is who they are and should be and should be celebrated and nourished who they are. Whatever it is, doesn't matter, it doesn't matter what it is, that they should feel good about themselves and get their confidence from that rather than from the external materialistic social media input, if that makes sense.
It does. In fact, I saw a thing last night, night before. I thought it was interesting. I've done shows on different aspects of social media before on adults and kids. But one thing I found really interesting, I've had it out for, I was gunning for Facebook for a while. I still am. but
I'm dating myself by saying Facebook. I think that, that the younger people really are on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok more than they are Facebook. But I still say Facebook as an example.
Well, yeah, and I think that's where people, whatever our age is, got on initially, might have been the first experience with social media to see the kids and the grandkids, because that was the only way you could. And as soon as we all arrived, they left, you know, and went elsewhere.
Right.
And I don't think the kids are on Twitter so much. It's bickering politics, adults, at least my notice. I think the big one now is TikTok. And without being political, this was just a piece that I saw. You know, TikTok is a Chinese-owned company. And what they showed on a news segment that I saw last night, I thought was quite interesting. It showed what they're, what the kids in China are allowed to see versus what kids are seeing. And a couple points came up that I thought were super relevant. And there are things that I've challenged parents before to do. But it wasn't a concrete thing like what I'm going to say right now, is that they're, first of all, what those kids were seeing were government propaganda, what we would call patriotism. I don't know what they call it, but honoring their country type stuff. And then educational things like engineering, and it had a kid doing the Rubik's Cube blindfolded or something. I mean, all these very impressive, you know, learning as a learning tool kind of thing. And then it flipped, you know, to what our kids were watching, and it showed a bunch of really young girls in scant bikinis with their hands behind them and their mouth open trying to catch wiener hot dogs in their mouth, looking foolish, you know, doing that, and or dressed very sexy, you know, things like that. Too much, girls too young with too much makeup, dressing too floozy, and trafficking bait. The other thing is that in China, they're only allowed 40 minutes. I don't know how they control this, but they've got a different kind of government. They got away. 40 minutes a day. Each kid is only allowed 40 minutes a day and never at night on social media. And, you know, ours, if you haven't noticed, it's hard to ever see a kid's face these days. Or their parents.
Right.
I'm getting to be old enough. You know, their face is in a device of some kind, but I've challenged parents before to limit the time, you know, limit the time on social media themselves and their kids. Because, you know, and I say each time that we'll go back to Facebook, although each are doing it their own way. I won't say any more about TikTok but at this time. But, you know, they've spent millions and millions of dollars by scientific people on how to make these platforms addictive.
Mm-hmm.
With the goal of having you spend, your kids spend, as much time as possible. They'd have you on there 24/7 salivating like the rat used to do for the cocaine, for the ping, for the likes.
Exactly. Yep.
And the friend requests, you know, they've spent money to make you addicted. And so I've thrown out challenges, which I'll do again, to parents and to try, if you're having some problems with your kids, try this. You'll have, if you're already
yep.
having problems, this will give you one more, but hey, go for it. You're already in the doghouse. you know, cut them off the social media for a period of time. And I usually tell them like 48 hours. And I say, mm-hmm. if after a couple hours you're feeling a tug of being uncomfortable or really angst, you know, then you know that you're addicted. The addictive properties
yep.
are working just like they would
yep.
with alcohol or drugs or gambling or anything else, that this subtle way that they invested so much in doing this on social media for a variety of reasons, that it's working. And that
oh, yeah.
at that point, I would hope, I would, you know, but it's like with alcohol, not everybody would want to change it if they did know it.
Mm-hmm.
But if
mm-hmm.
you did know that you were having an addictive reaction from not being on, or that your kid was, you know, maybe you're taking your kid into the traditional, having behavioral problems, depression problems,
yep.
other types of issues like that, and they are worse in that 48 hours of not being on social media, you know that that's part of the problem.
Yes.
And
yep.
that's something to talk about
yep.
with a practitioner.
That's a good point.
Like yourself, whoever the practitioner is going to be, you know, you want to have some help with that, because, you know, they didn't even make computers. No, they made computers.
Yeah.
They had funny paper that you tore off the side, but there was no such thing as social media when I was coming up, and I thank God
right.
that there wasn't. You know, I thank
yeah.
God there wasn't YouTube and people taping me do all the ridiculous things that I see people doing online.
yeah.
Or dangerous
no
things, you know. I thank God every day that that didn't have to be something I had to deal with, because there was enough other things
yeah.
to deal with at the time without it being televised for time
right.
and eternity. you know, not a good thing. But in any case, I think limiting some of that time on social media would help. It, and it also gives you that time that you need, that you're talking about, to, instead of having it be defined for the kid by, you know, something that really makes me gag while we're on my list of pet peeves, I guess, is the word, quote unquote, influencers.
Mm-hmm.
The people on social media that are the influencers to our kids. And
mm-hmm.
Some of those influencers, seriously, would you want your kid to be like that?
Yeah, right? Yep.
Not really, you know. The
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's, right, the influencers, and even, like you say, it's been scientifically proven that every time you get a thumbs up or a like, it does hit the dopamine responsor in your brain, just like a hit of cocaine, probably not quite to the same degree, but it absolutely has the same chemical effect. And so people stay honest to try to get more likes and more. So you're right. It is absolutely scientifically, chemically addictive. But so there are two things here. There are a couple things here. For one thing, parents set the example. And I see all the time parents on their phones at the restaurant tables or wherever it may be, the parents are on their phones, and that is setting the example for the kids. The kids only learn from what they see around them. A two-year-old is not going to pick up a phone on their own unless their parent hands it to them and says, here, this is your entertainment. So the example that parents set by how much time they spend on their phone makes a very big difference. And when you talk about the, I think you said it was the Chinese that say the kids can be on social media 40 minutes a day. I think it's the American Academy of Pediatrics, but it's been shown here in the U.S. that all kids under, I don't know, maybe 12 or 14, once they spend more than an hour a day on technology, as in, you know, not beneficial technology, but social media and games and stuff like that, more than an hour a day starts to have a detrimental effect on them. An hour a day is nothing compared to, I mean, for what I see kids on, an hour a day is practically nothing. But once over an hour, it does start to have an adverse effect on kids. It's been proven through studies. So,
well, and see, before I ever put my kid on an antidepressant, I would take away the social media and see how that worked.
Yeah. That's,
in conjunction
that
with
really
other things, but
yeah.
But before I ever let anybody put a pill in my kid's throat for something like that, the social media would go.
Yeah. But a lot of parents, well, for one thing, it's easier to feed your child medication, even though it's not the best way. But there are a lot of parents, I think, that either don't understand the importance of it or just find it easier just to not take the phone away and spend face-to-face time with their kid. It's not difficult. It's the way humans are meant to interact. And we've grown apart from that. We've grown away from face-to-face interaction. And I think, in fact, I know, I don't blame it on the kids in the least bit. It's the parents that are setting the example and that set the rules and have control over the phones. And not to be a Nazi about it or be so stringent that it makes for an adversarial relationship with your child. But it doesn't have to be that way. There are many other things you can do with your kid than both of you being sitting on your phones, either texting each other across the room or playing games or social media or whatever. There's so many other ways you can interact with your child in a positive way, which is so much better for both you and for the parent and the child. It just makes a huge difference. And like you say, rather than pop a pill, just put the phone down and spend time. It's really simple.
Well, I agree. And the other thing, you know, that you were talking about, a lot of times parents project what they want it to be or what they think their creation should be on to the kid. And, you know, what I was reading in the beginning when I brought you on, if you force your kid this way and they're really this way, you know, that's going to cause a problem. And I think that, you know, parents can make some assumptions about what their kid should do, what their kid will want to do without ever asking the kid, you know, and invalidate the kid's wants, needs, desires because the parent is older and they're the parent. They're older and they know better. So we're going to pretend, you know, that they've left the phone for a minute because really you're right. This last generation that's got the little kids now, they were the ones that started and are there setting that example of being on the social media constantly now. It was the people my age that were their parents. And I think, you know, for one thing, we didn't my husband, people I know, my friends, they didn't give their kid a cell phone when they were six, you know.
Right.
They were much older when they got their first
yep.
cell phone, and then they never got off of it. But then they went and got their kids' cell phones when they were 10 years old, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they started that pattern earlier and then were mirroring what the parent was doing, like that was normal behavior. And then the grandparent age people are like, wow, this is really weird. You know, people are texting
yep.
each other at the same table. You know, and I think back to time again, you know, when I was growing up, one of the things that was insisted, not only from my parents to me, but my grandparents to their kids, was that at dinner time, everything was dropped. The TV was turned off. Schoolwork put away, off the telephone, and people actually sat down at dinner time, and that's when you talked to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not that there weren't other times, but that was a forced time.
Yep.
You know, over the family dinner table where people actually talked about how was your day, you know, what's going on in school. And there was a way to be able to have a conversation with some continuity that didn't get broken up by just giving a kid a ride from point A to point B and dropping them off,
right.
you know,
yep.
where you'd actually be in an environment where if there was something that appeared to be troubling someone or you did want to share about a topic, everybody's seated already and in the same room. And so the time is easier, you know, to negotiate there. And I think I liked what you were talking about helping the kid find their own autonomy and the parents being able to adjust from projecting. Again, I think every parent wants what's best for their kid, but a lot of times they think what's best for their kid is what they want.
Right.
Living vicariously
yeah.
through their kid. I see that a lot in sports, you know.
Yes.
Sports that I'm advocating against because people die or get disabled the rest of their life from playing them, and I don't see the point, you know.
Right.
But there's parents who did that, and they have no prouder moment than when their kid makes the team, you know. And I sit here knowing, interviewing hundreds of people after 12 and a half years, you know, that can be the death or disability of that kid or change that kid's life for
mm-hmm.
its entire future by cognitive impairment, you know.
Yeah.
And then everybody's plans might be a no-go.
Yep.
And so I think the happier a person is, and all the people start out kids, the happier. Another thing I want to address really quick before you have to go, I was going to just finish that sentence, was if they're to thine own self be true, if the kid's doing what feels good for them, you know, provided it's happy, healthy, et cetera, that it's empowering,
right.
encourages resilience, not anxiety, not depression, all of that.
Yep.
But I think there was a tendency in the same generation we're talking about. There was divorce before that, but somewhere it changed because my parents sure didn't have this issue. But of parents wanting to be their kid's best friend,
yes.
and not their kid's parent. You know, they
right.
were frightened to death to parent their kid. And a lot of times it was divorce situation and competition
mm-hmm.
maybe between the parents, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted to be the bad cop, you know.
Right.
And so in being the good cop, both of them, they created monsters
yeah.
who had problems, you know, because
yeah.
other people weren't going to tolerate that kind of boiled narcissistic behavior. And that isn't empowering for the kid or any of the relationships they're going to have, unless, you know, we're probably getting to a point now where there's enough of them that all be running into each other, and that's got to be a recipe for disaster. To have all these self-centered, entitled people, you know, trying to get together and have some kind of a relationship. So how do you let a parent know that it's okay to be a parent, that, yeah, you want to have a friendly relationship, but the difference between a friend and a parent is that a parent is, with a capital P, the parent.
Right.
They're not supposed to be the best friend. Is there a way that you can assure parents that it's the right thing to do in the long run, it's the best thing to do, even if your kid gets mad at you? They'll get over it.
Oh, my
it.
God. Yeah, of course your kids are going to get mad at you. That's your job as a parent, is to teach your child how to get along in the world. Your number one job as a parent is to raise a child that can go and survive in the world on their own. They can take care of themselves, and they can, even better yet, contribute to the world in a positive way. And so I think that our biggest job is to teach our children, teach them what's right, what's wrong, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. Self-centeredness is not really what you want to teach your child. Everybody has their own values, so I'm not going to preach about values, but certainly to do no harm to other people. And we also want to guide them. So I steer away from micromanaging and helicoptering and telling your child what they have to do and what you're supposed to do based on what the parent wants. But you want to guide them. So if a child says to a ex-football star of a father, says, "Well, Dad, you know, I want to be in the school play," that the father doesn't say, "No, you're going to be a football player," and doesn't take charge and control and make the child go out to football. I know that's probably a very tender subject with you. But if the child says, you know, "I want to try acting," or whatever it is that they want to do, then you encourage that. You say, "Go for it. If that's what feels, if that's what lights you up, if that's what makes you want to get up in the morning because you want to go to acting class or rehearsal or whatever, then great. That's what's meant for the child, not to go out and fulfill Dad's dreams of some jock." So guidance, teaching right from wrong and the important values in the world, and guiding them through, helping them to hopefully avoid danger and avoid the pitfalls, even though that's inevitable. You want your children to experience some kind of pitfalls and failures and difficulties in life, because that also is what builds resilience. But my big thing is to find out what is your child's passion, what enlivens them, what lights them up, and what makes them really happy, and encourage that and nourish that, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I think that's great, because helping your kid find out you instead of a Kardashian, helping your kid find out what they want to be and what they would find to be meaningful, it would be cool if the parent could be the influencer and not...
Right. And not the social media character.
Like, right. Not the people like that, because none of that is real. You know, what
exactly.
The parents have had is real experience. Good experiences, bad experiences, but they've had real life experiences, and they care, and I'm sure want the best for their kids. So, you know, and you only got one set of those. There's different influencers every 2 seconds, you know, and they're as shallow as the baby pool, so nothing to aspire to there. But if parents can wind up being parents who are supportive and helping a child be empowered in what they want to do and what makes them feel good, then they're not going to need and crave for their very sanity that affirmation from strangers on social media or at school or any place else, because they're going to feel comfortable and satisfied and purpose-driven within themselves. And that's, you know, I know grown-ups that aren't like that, but if it could be started, the groundwork being laid when they're kids to carry on, then so much of what's going on right now could be avoided or mitigated, I'll say. But I know we're running out of time a little bit, so I do want to hit your – you can finish what you were going to say if you want. Then I was just
I was just going to say what you say about laying the ground – the groundwork when they're kids. That is what's so important, laying the groundwork, because then so I was just saying that exactly what you said is spot on, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, so you started your parent coaching business, Moms on a Mission. Because you saw an urgent need to help parents understand and handle child raising challenges. So when you go to Julie's website, which is Julie Phillips, two L's, Hatch, H-A-T-C-H, juliephillipshatch.com, you're going to find all kinds of good stuff, information about her, information about her coaching. She has a podcast that you should check out, and that's on Tuesdays, right? And then is there a specific time that that's on? There's a new topic that she talks about. If you are kind of into this and you want to know more, I'll repeat the name of the book again, but listening to her podcast each week, they have a new topic that approaches insights into the art of parenting. And so if you're interested in enhancing your child's well-being, which in turn enhances yours, then you might check out the podcast.
Yes,
and you'll be able to find that on Julie Phillips Hatch. So it's Tuesdays, but is it on at a specific time or just a new one comes? Are yours pre-recorded or how does that work?
Yeah, no, they're pre-recorded and they get posted up on Tuesday mornings, first thing in the morning. And so you can catch it any time on Tuesday or any other day of the week because they are pre-recorded and they just stay up on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, all the regular podcast platforms.
Great. And there is a way to write Julie if you have a question. But again, after the show is over tonight, within an hour on the same link, you can play the show back on demand. And I will go back in the program notes with the two guests I had. Not a lot of character space. And at the time, I didn't have Julie's website. It wasn't with my, in fact, I don't think I had my guest website either. For some reason, that doesn't usually come with press kits, and that it really should, you know, because I'm asking people each time, and I always want to put it in my program notes, and I tell the audience every week that if you missed, you know, if you were driving or in your easy chair or whatever and you missed the website, I want to make sure you're able to get that. So it will be in the program notes. After the show, I'll put it in there, and then you don't have to listen to the whole show to find juliephillipshatch.com. So, again, you can get coaching on parenting information, listen to the podcast, or check out her new book, Parenting Revolution for Higher Evolution, which I think is, again, just a really cool name for the book and so spot on of, you know, what we're looking to do and the challenges that are going on, particularly at this time, you know, between, parenting was never an easy task. There was never a handbook, but with, gosh, between COVID, wars, politics, now inflation, all of the things, COVID, lockdowns, you know, things that have been going on the last couple of years, it's been so difficult. And I think child trafficking has probably always happened, but it's in the spotlight now. There's a lot more opportunity with social media to access kids than there was in the past. And unhappy kids, depressed kids, kids with anxiety or that feel like they're looking for affirmation are going to be the ones that are going to be susceptible to biting on that hook when it gets tossed their way. So, you know, the more you can help support and give your kid the affirmation while still the discipline, which they're going to want, they're going to need. They're going to need. Let me put it that way, because life says you don't always get your way, and you learn that the hard way or the easy way. And kids might think it's the hard way with their parents, but they have no idea, you know.
That's right.
That's really the easy way there. So in any case, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, I just think that I just want to offer all kinds of support for parents out there. It is a wonderful job. It is you're blessed with a job to be a parent. You may not feel it in the moment, but it is really a really important job, and I just support all the parents out there that are listening, and that buy my book. And for any help or any suggestions or anything like that, they can contact me. And regardless of whether you contact me or not, just good luck on your parenting and just go with your gut. And thank you, Kim, for having me on the show.
Thank you so much, Julie, for being here. I really appreciate it. So, again, everyone, that's Julie Hatch. And check out our website, Julie Phillips, two L's, one P, juliephillipshatch.com. And thank you so much for what you're doing. We hear a lot about the problems of, you know, one-parent households and the wrong kind of parenting, but don't often get the encouragement and the tools from people that are trying to work on the solution and not perpetuate the problem or only talk about the problem, but offer viable solutions and ones that aren't in a pill bottle. So I appreciate that. Thanks so much for being here, and good luck with what you're doing, and I hope you'll be back again sometime.
Great. Thanks so much, Kim.
You bet. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, everybody, that was Julie Hatch, and what a great thing. If you'd like to call in, I see my second guest is not here yet. I think that she got I do not have her number, I don't think. I'll have to look here and see if I do. But I think what I'll do is play a song. And if you have any questions or anything that you'd like to talk about, the number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. And feel free to call me. Talk about parenting, where you're at with your brain injury, or anything else. And with that, I'm going to play a song by Brulé. They're a Native American band out of Minnesota. And you can find them at brulerecords.com, B-R-U-L-E, brulerecords.com. They have many great CDs. One of them, one of my favorites, is called Night Tree, and this is the title cut off Night Tree with Nicole on the flute. And I'll be right back. 5 minutes. Thanks. That was Night Tree by BruleRecords.com. So, my guest, I've got her agent trying to reach her right now, who's going to be on in the second hour. If not, I'll play some music, but I also have some material I didn't get to about sharpening your brain on some exercises. Not literally, please. some exercises to sharpen your brain and stay fresh, which I can talk about. But my guest, second guest, is to be Ileana Gilad. And after just playing Brulé and talking to Julie, who spoke about getting into Eastern medicine, one of the reasons I paired, hopefully, this next guest with Julie is that she did something similar with words, tones, and song, using those as healing, healing mechanisms. Hang on. Given me her number, and she needs to call into the studio. Okay, well, we'll probably be having her. Looks like she must have gotten a hold of her. But in any case, we've had on people talking about music therapy before, and we've talked about drumming, the power of drumming, and voice, rhythm, consciousness tools, and that's what Ileana is going to be talking about. She's been a keynote speaker at 2 TEDx events, and been given the nod by Marianne Williamson. I was going to say someone else in her ilk, but Marianne Williamson. And so we know that art in general has healing properties, but music does as well. I think we have Bill Protzman on before, the veteran, and he talked about healing powers of music, and a group on that was a percussive group. Oh, okay. She said she's called and texted, the agent did. So, okay. What I'm going to do is run out real quick and grab a piece of material. I'm going to play another song. If this gal doesn't show up, I'll just take the notes off and put that website of Julie's on here and play you some more music. Sorry, I can't multitask. I can't text and talk at the same time. But I'm going to put on another song. Tonight, I'm all day today, actually, and tonight, and for a while, I've been thinking about and praying for our founder, Craig. He's sick and was in the hospital a couple weeks ago, went back to the hospital today, and if you're of a praying state of mind, I hope you will pray that he gets better, and that's all I'll say about that right now. I'm just concerned and praying that he gets well. So I'm going to play a song by him. This is called Brain Injury Road. And I'll grab my other material and be right back. Thank you.
Thank you. myself to stop to suck some more now. Have you ever been down before so low? You just want to overdose yourself. Yeah, you try so hard, but life's way too tough, because the brains we got given weren't large enough. So you try to get by working 9 to 5, full-time bullshit for the rest of your life. It sounds like you, well, you just like me. The only difference is I found a reason to be free, like the birds in the sky or a fish release. Free like the sun setting over the sea. And I feel so high, just can't help it. Ask myself the reasons why I'm blessed with a life so full of benefits. But I'm gonna keep on walking down my road until I'm tired and gray and old. I won't look back until I know I did my best to help this world. When are we gonna stop and realize everybody's equal? I don't know, but as far as I can tell, the rich are getting richer while the poor are needing help. So dig right down deep inside of your soul and find the peace, love, and happiness that's shining like gold in your mind. Feel so great, so you need to be, and so you can, the best you can, and I know you can.
And that was Craig, very talented singer and songwriter. And the band was The, T-H-E-E, the letter R, Insane. TheRInsane.com. I see the website is down. The band, after 15 years, was going to do a farewell tour. And they did a four album worth of music, and they already had so many albums. I wish I could get on there and tell you how many albums they have. So many in that 15 years. And so they were in the studio doing the recording, and they actually got the recording done. the studio work all done and the music is out there. And then COVID hit, and the tour is where bands make their money. And this was going to be their farewell tour anyway. After 15 years, they had decided they were going to move on for a while. And, you know, one way or another, they had a different name at one time, and they had moved on, and then they got back together after a few years. Some other details in there I won't take the time to talk about right now. But they got back and reincarnated as The R Insane. And that music is up. It's going to be taken down soon, not to be found again. But if you go on Facebook or on Spotify.com/the the letter R Insane, you'll find the music there to be downloaded for free. You don't even have to buy it. Grab it while you can, because the music will be coming down. In any case, my thoughts and prayers are with Craig getting better. He's in the hospital, and that makes me sad. Makes me really sad. But Brain Injury Road, I'm sure you can all relate to that. That's somewhere we've all been. I'm going to switch. It looks like my second guest isn't going to make it, so I will delete that part of the program notes, and I'll put Julie Hatch's website on there. So after the show is over, you give it about 45 minutes to truncate, and you'll be able to find Julie's website. I'm sure you'll want to look at her. I encourage you to look at her website on parenting. I think any resource that a person can have to help with a daunting job like parenting is a good one. And so her website will be there. And I encourage you to listen to her podcast. And the podcast, she mentioned a lot of places where it was, but real easy when you find a website like mine or hers. Most websites are the driver for everything else a person does. How to find their book, how to find if they coach, how to find their podcast if they do it. And so I will put that down, like I said, right after we go off the air, which will be shortly. In the meantime, if you want to call and interrupt me in this last half hour that I have where I'm going to be talking about brain exercises, please do. My number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. A lot of us have talked about the fact that memory is an issue for us, or lack thereof, that we have memory problems after our brain injury. And I found an article that said, let's dive deeper into 13 evidence-based exercises that offer the best brain-boosting benefits to keep your brain sharp as you get older. Now, I was kind of laughing about that because a lot of us who had our brain injuries at a younger age, it felt like our brain was older by virtue of our injury, because we get sensory overload and brain fog, trouble focusing, trouble grabbing the right word, trouble with our memory, and it was as if our brain had already aged. And I'm telling you, as someone who has aged since I was 35 and had my brain injury and the 12 and a half years I've been here, it doesn't get better as you get older. It only gets worse. And so again, any of the help that we can get is a good thing. I was trying to think of what that one app was called, but I'm not going to promote apps because I heard mixed reviews from a lot of people and I don't hear about it anymore. And so I don't know if people gave up on that or what, but some of these things, number one, was have fun with a jigsaw puzzle. God, I hated those from the time I was a kid, but living in Nebraska every winter when it would be snowy, my parents would put up the old card table and put out a jigsaw puzzle with a zillion pieces and start working around the perimeter and then filling it in. I was never very good at it, but maybe this winter I'll try it. Or if you haven't tried a jigsaw puzzle, it's shown, research has shown that doing jigsaw puzzle recruits multiple cognitive abilities and is a protective factor for visuospatial cognitive aging. In other words, when putting together a jigsaw puzzle, you have to look at different pieces and figure out where they fit within the larger picture. This can be a great way to challenge and exercise your brain. So, if the research said so, maybe we should try it. Number two, try your hand at cards. When was the last time you played a game of cards? Been a long time for me. Researchers who conducted a study in 2015 Trusted Source on mentally stimulating activities for adults say a quick card game can lead to greater brain volume in several regions of the brain. The same study also found that a game of cards could improve memory, yay, and thinking skills. Try learning one of these tried and true card games: solitaire, bridge, gin rummy, poker, hearts, crazy eights. Guess I'm having trouble spitting out my words tonight. Which brings me to number three, build your vocabulary. You know, this was something we were talking about parenting earlier that my dad had me do from the time I was a kid. And I really appreciate it. I've got a good vocabulary, and this is a really good exercise. The way I did it, and then I'll read whatever it is they have to say, is he told me each week to open up a dictionary, randomly open it to any page, put my finger down on a word, and see what that new word was. It had to be a new word that I didn't know already, and then use that word all week long. Make sentences and contexts that I could use that word in. And when I did that, that word became part of my vocabulary. Now, they say a rich vocabulary has a way of making you sound smart, but did you know you can also turn a quick vocab lesson into a stimulating brain game? Research shows that many more regions of the brain are involved in vocabulary tasks, particularly in the areas that are important for visual and auditory processing. To test this theory, try this cognitive boosting activity. Keep a notebook with you when you read. Write down one unfamiliar word, then look up the definition. Try to use that word 5 times the next day. So that's their suggestion. And mine is my dad's. Open a dictionary to any random place every week. Put your finger down on a word. And if it's a word you know already, move your finger down one until you find, up or down, until you find a word you don't know, and use it in as many contexts as you can for a week. So there's a couple different ways to help broaden your vocabulary. And again, all of these are research-based. Number four, dance your heart out. If you can. God, after breaking my foot in 2 places in my ankle last year around this time, I think these things take a really long time to heal. Not broken anymore, but a lot harder on the dancing. The Center for Disease Prevention and Control notes that learning new dance moves can increase your brain's processing speed and memory. In other words, bust a move on the dance floor and your brain will thank you. Want to test it? Give one of these dance activities a try. Take a salsa, tap, hip-hop, or contemporary dance class. Try a Zumba or jazz exercise class. Watch an online video with fun dance moves you've always wanted to learn. Grab a partner and learn to ballroom dance. Gather your friends and go line dancing. So there's some ideas on dancing. Now, I was fortunate. I've done a lot of those things, and I happened to grow up in the disco era where I was the disco diva and did all kinds of dancing. It's not only good for your brain, according to this, your brain's processing speed and memory, but also your health. A fun way, if you're not a gym rat, to do something different that works every part of your body and circulation. So good suggestion for both your brain and your body. Number 5, use all your senses. A 2015 research report, Trust Source, suggests that using all your senses may help strengthen your brain. To give your senses and your brain a workout, try doing activities that simultaneously engage all 5 of your senses. You could try baking a batch of cookies, visiting a farmer's market, or try a new restaurant while you focus on smelling, touching, tasting, seeing, and hearing all at the same time. I would also suggest to you there that in addition to those, in conjunction with those, that in your own backyard, you can do that. It's summer for a lot of us around here. If it's winter, you've got another way of doing it. But in the summer, we can smell flowers that are blooming. We can smell freshly cut grass. We can touch the petals, the soft petals of a rose or a flower in the garden. We can hear the birds singing. We can taste a dandelion, provided we haven't put fertilizer on it. I remember a trip with my grandma when I was young to Amish land in Iowa where everything was made from dandelions, dandelion wine, dandelion salad. A lot of people into health food eat dandelion. So when I was thinking of something to taste in the backyard besides something I would bring out from the house, that was one thing. But listening to the birds sing, smelling the fresh cut grass, touching the soft petals, seeing and hearing the things in your surroundings and making sure that those are comfortable surroundings that don't overload your senses. But so many times we're just walking through the backyard or sitting on the deck talking or doing whatever we're doing, and we're not really paying attention to what's going on out in the yard. In fact, one of my books, Hootie's Hollow and the Magic Tree, talks about that. It kind of harkens back to stop and smell the roses. When we get to going too fast or we're just not paying attention, using all of our senses to experience often what's in our own backyard, Dorothy, is a good and healthy thing. Number 6, learn a new skill. Learning a new skill is not only fun and interesting, but it may also help strengthen the connections in your brain. This same research, also shows that learning a new skill can help improve memory function, I'll say, with any adult. Is there something you've always wanted to learn to do? Perhaps you'd like to know how to repair a car, use a particular software program or app, ride a horse. Now you have one more good reason to learn a new skill. Me, I like genealogy a lot. I like photography a lot, as most of you know, and we have a new puppy who I'm going to applaud, Eddie. We've had him a month as of last Friday, and so this is actually my fifth show, and unlike any puppy we've ever had, he has been the perfect quiet angel, sleeping next to me in a playpen, so cute, and not making any noise to disturb the show, which I appreciate. He's a good boy, and I'm not going to say his name again. I might wake him up. But speaking of hobbies, one of them I'm doing right now is I taught him to sit, and he learned in one session. Boy, was that fun. And fetch, little, they got a little puppy-sized tennis ball. And, I woke him up just in case. It's good we're toward the end of the show. But that's one of the things I'm going to be taking on that's new, aside from the other things that I like to do as hobbies, trying something new, will be teaching my dog some tricks. And if you have a pet and you haven't taught that pet tricks, it might be something you try to do close to home. Or just think about anything that you'd like to do. Do you draw? Would you like to paint? We have a page on Facebook that we sponsor that's disability art. It's called the Disability Art. If you're someone with a brain injury and you find disability art, you can join the page. It's not a sales page. It's more a display page. The whole idea behind it was exactly this, encouraging people to find their inner artist. And whether it's wood carving or painting or ironwork or no matter what it is, we were just showing ourselves and others what we could do when it was put to us to find our inner artist. And that's one hobby. Number seven. Teach a new skill to someone else. One of the best ways to expand your learning is to teach a skill to another person. After you learn a new skill, you need to practice it. Teaching it to someone else requires you to explain the concept and correct any mistakes you make. For example, learn to swing a golf club, then teach the steps to a friend. In my case, I've taught probably 50 people how to be a host, how to do a podcast. And then I taught a podcast through the community college, a class, I mean, on how to do a podcast. And Craig actually is an instructor, and remotely I taught his class how to do a podcast. And I must say that was gratifying to teach other people. It also made me think about some things that have been rote and automatic to me that are problems and learning curve stuff for new people. And so that's a cool thing. Teaching someone else a new skill also has that element of service that is really good for all of us. Number eight. What my guest was going to be talking about, what I was doing in between, and what I'll do on my way out, listen to or play music. Do you want an easy way to increase your creative brain power? The answer may lay in turning on some music. The same research says listening to happy tunes helps generate more innovative solutions compared to being in silence, which means cranking up some feel-good music can help boost your creative thinking and brain power. And if you want to learn how to play music, now is a great time to start because your brain is capable of learning new skills at any point in your life. That's why you're never too old to start playing an instrument like the piano, guitar, or even the drums. And I really encourage that. I miss the fact, I don't think they do it anymore, but when I was a kid, they made everybody take a year of band. And I grew up part Italian, in Italian heritage, and one of the things my grandpa insisted on for his kids, and then it was carried down, to my generation is that everybody, boys and girls, had to play an instrument and do a sport, at least one. That was just part of the deal. That's what you did. And so I encourage you to try it. If you've always wanted to play the guitar or play the piano, you might not be able to buy a piano, but they've got apps that have keyboards now. They also have portable type pianos that are much less expensive than the old-fashioned piano, don't need to be tuned. And guitars are much easier to tune these days, or ukuleles were huge for a while. But a cool thing to do, listening to music. You don't want to listen to depressing, cry-in-your-beer kind of music. If you're prone to anxiety or depression, that's not where you want to go. You want to go to the music that makes you feel good. The music that makes you feel good, for sure. And also trying to learn to play some. Okay, number 9, take a new route. Oh, God. This could be a problem for some of us. Don't get stuck in the rut when it comes to your daily tasks. Instead, be willing to try, oh, thank goodness, new ways to do the same things. Choose a different route to get to work each week, or try a different mode of transportation like biking. No. Or using public transportation instead of driving. Your brain can benefit from this simple change, and you might be surprised how easy it is to change your thinking. I think what I would stick to on that is not only what they said, which you could certainly do. We've got people on here who ride recumbent bikes and have a great time with it. Got people on here that work, and I used to do that, take an alternate way to work. Now I just take an alternate way to going places. I don't like the interstate anymore. Our town has grown a lot. There's so much more traffic. Everybody's going so much faster that I find myself gripping the wheel so hard I've got a neck ache by the time I'm done driving. So I prefer to go through the city. And when we're relaxing on the weekends, I prefer to get out of the city and go drive in the country. So finding new ways to go, even if you take a walk, and you usually out of habit are on the same path when you take your walk, go the other direction. Go through opposite. Go around different blocks. Drive a short ways in your neighborhood if you can afford the gas, or an adjoining neighborhood. Perhaps to a park and walk in a different place. Maybe find a place that's got a neat garden. We've got a memorial park that has a beautiful rose garden. When it's not 100 degrees anymore, if the roses aren't dead, I may drive down there and do my walk through there. So changing up on routine, I think, is what they're getting at here on the taking a new route. Just change up on some of your status quo, because that's going to stimulate your thinking. Number 10, meditate. Daily meditation can calm your body, slow your breathing, and reduce stress and anxiety. But did you know that it may also help fine-tune your memory and increase your brain's ability to process information? Find a quiet spot, close your eyes, and spend 5 minutes meditating each day. Now, we've had a number of shows on meditation. I'm not going to spend a long time on this, but meditating has to do with emptying the garbage from your mind and synchronizing your breath, taking deep breaths, deep, long breaths in, holding it for a few seconds, and then a long exhale. And when you do that, you can feel your muscles lighten. your shoulders that might be up around your ears, you can feel them dropping. You can feel the relaxation and the tension leaving your body with those deep breaths. And as far as quieting your brain, focus on your breath. If you're focusing on that breath, breathing in, say the count of 10, slowly is the key. Not the short, shallow breaths that people who have anxiety and so forth do. But deep inhales, holding a couple counts, long exhales. You know, do that and focus just on the breath. That will help you quiet the chaos in your brain. The other thing that I learned to do when I was doing yoga years ago was to light a candle and not to look at the flame, not to look at the wick, but in between that, there's a blue area just above the wick, below the flame. We were taught to gaze at that without taking our eyes off of it for the 5 or 10 minutes while we were doing the breathing. And so we were not only focused on the breathing, but on that one part of the candle only, not letting our eyes go elsewhere. And magic happened. After doing that for a couple minutes, it was like the rest of the room was gone. And we were just in a blank space. And the chaos in our mind matched. So that's one of the tips I learned when I was learning how to meditate. A lot of people don't think that they can meditate because they've got too much chaos going on in their mind and body. But you take baby steps, walk before you run, and focusing on your breath is the first really important thing. Number 11, we've heard a lot. Learn a new language. I know Pig Latin. If you're not that old, you may not know what that is. But also, a lot of apps on learning a new language has overwhelmingly proven that many cognitive benefits of being able to speak more than one language. According to numerous studies, bilingualism can contribute to better memory, improved visual spatial skills, and higher levels of creativity. Being fluent in more than one language may also help you switch more easily between different tasks and delay the onset of age-related mental decline. The good news is that it's never too late to reap the rewards of learning a new language. According to researchers, you can boost your memory and improve other mental functions by becoming a student of a new language at any time in your life. So, number 12, take up Tai Chi. It's no secret that Tai Chi can benefit your health in many ways, including your mental health. Plus, it can also help center you when life seems out of balance. Taking up a regular Tai Chi can help reduce stress, enhance sleep quality, and improve memory. A 2013 study found that long-term Tai Chi practice could induce structural changes in the brain, resulting in an increase in brain volume. Beginners do best by taking a class to learn different movements, but once you know the basics, you can practice Tai Chi anywhere, anytime. I will tell you that falls are the number one causal factor for brain injuries, believe it or not, falls. And things like Tai Chi will help with balance. Now, if we need it, have problems with ataxia, that sort of thing, it will help our balance now and as we age. Good to get into that kind of a practice. It's also slow movements. On the first Wednesday of August, I'll be having Master Shaw back, who was on my show a few years ago, and he will be talking about Qi Gong. I don't have my note in front of me. Similar to Tai Chi, but in any case, a slow movement-based exercise. And when you see these things, you might think, that looks too easy, but I'm telling you, holding a position, things like yoga, Tai Chi, is easier than most yoga. Qigong, holding poses really helps tone. So if you're looking again, once again, for something to get your circulation going that's good for your body, good for your mind, good for your brain, good for your balance, I encourage you to try Tai Chi. Number 13, focus on another person. The next time you interact with someone, take note of four things about them. Maybe you observe the color of their skirt or pants. Are they wearing glasses? Do they have a hat on? If so, what kind of hat? What color is their hair? Once you decide on four things to remember, make a mental note and come back later to it that day. Write down what you remember about those four details. Now that's interesting. I know we've all probably have had cognitive tests where they give us a certain amount of words and then switch to showing us pictures and then go back and have us recite those words. This is an interesting way to do that exercise yourself by observing another person. Picking out four things about that person, writing it down, coming back to that paper later. And I would recommend, since it's us, that we write down the name of the person, the name of the person that we observed four things about. And when we come back later, just glance if we don't remember who that person was, and then think about, with a clean piece of paper, not cheating, what the four things might have been that we noticed about that person and see if we can remember. That's definitely a great memory exercise. Bottom line, focusing on your brain health is one of the best things you can do to improve your concentration, focus, memory, and mental agility, no matter what age you are. By incorporating brain exercises into your everyday life, you'll get to challenge your mind, sharpen your cognitive skills, and possibly learn something new and enriching along the way, too. So, there you have it. 13 items to help you sharpen your brain. This was something I was going to read when Simon and I did our show about, can brain aging really be reversible? Because there had been some press on it, and we talked about, can we reverse brain aging? And we talked about that on that show, and one of the things I wasn't able to get to were these exercises that help keep 13 brain exercises to help keep your brain mentally sharp. And so there we go, the other half of that show. I think there were some good tips in there and things for you to remember or to try. Beats the heck out of sitting in a dark room pondering things we can't change. These are the kind of things that help empower us. And that's what we're here for. So that worked out really good. I want to thank Julie Hatch for being with me tonight. I hope Ileana is okay and we might see her a different time on the show. I hope that you guys have a great week. Keep cool. It's really hot out there. Again, if you have some extra prayers, please send them up for Craig. Helping him get better. And I'm going to close with a song by Daniel Christian. You can find him at Daniel Christian Music craigbrown.com. He's a great guy. Was a school teacher. Like Craig, he's a school teacher. Daniel was a school teacher who actually was another one fortunate to be able to make his income by music, now exclusively. And this is something that we are always trying to do. And those kids Julia was talking about, this is called Find My Voice. So good night and God bless everyone. I will be back next week, I believe, with Simon, if it's the last Wednesday of the month. Otherwise, whatever it is, I'll be back next Wednesday. And this is Find My Voice. Good night, everybody. Thanks so much.
Question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Maybe we all have a role to play. Maybe this is my inauguration day. Finally getting used to my own skin. Never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my we'll
That was Daniel Christian. You can find him at danielchristianmusic.com. And that was Find My Voice. I think I am going to play one more out. This is Craig Cecilia with I Think I Need a Savior. Don't we all? And knowing his is close by.
Contemplate about the things I do. Well, I can't seem to recognize. Why can't I see beyond these eyes?